And welcome to the Rambling Runner Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Chittum, and this is the podcast for all the dedicated amateur runners out there who are working hard to get better while balancing running with the rest of their lives. Super fun show today with Ryan Hurley. I love talking to former swimmers. It is such an interesting conversation because their approach to athletics, especially as teenagers, is wild. So we definitely dive into that and how he's able to transition from swimming into running, and how that approach changed the way he viewed athletics, how he changed with his training and all of those things. This was a really fun conversation because now he's about to embark on Leadville. So I'm about to do an ultra up in Leadville, a historic race, and I really want to talk to him before he went up there, before we get into it. However, I do want to give a quick shout out to our sponsors, of course, because we couldn't be doing this without our sponsors. We have Vacation Races and SaySky. Go check them out today. Vacation Races has some of the best and most interesting races in the world. I mean, their international races are second to none. True, exciting experiences that will last a long time in your memory. Also, they have some really interesting domestic races too. Marathons and half marathons. SaySky, I've been wearing their running gear now for about a month. Holy cow. It is so good. They have some super, super light running shirts, and they have a little bit more comfortable running shirts that have a little bit more like soft texture to them. They're both absolutely fantastic. They both have a place in the shorts. Oh my God. They're 2-in-1 running shorts. They're the best running shorts I've ever purchased. Bar none. No question about it. I mean, they are absolutely phenomenal. I saw a Ginger Runner review of their 2-in-1 shorts for his Gear of the Year award videos. I don't know if you see them. Every December he puts out Gear of the Year awards, and they were in there. I was like, oh, I got to check these out, and I am so glad that I did. So you can go check out the links to both of those in the show notes, but it's interview time with Ryan Hurley. All right, my friend Ryan Hurley is on the show. Ryan, welcome, my man.
Great to see you, Matt.
This is going to be a lot of fun. I love talking to specifically people who grew up as swimmers. I think that is the most insane youth sport around. I mean, maybe the only other one that I can think of that might be there as well is crew because of the hours. But crew is not like a sport that you find everywhere. Right. So like I grew up in New England. So crew was kind of around, like not really, like, not at my high school, Lord knows. But like I was aware of it. And yet, swimming is everywhere, and youth swimming is—it's just literally—it's insane. So I couldn't wait to talk to you for a lot of reasons, but I love talking to swimmers just to like get the lowdown on what athletics was like when they were youngsters, and like why they're okay with being athletes now. Because I feel like I would be like, I'm burnt out for life, never again. So thanks for coming on.
To that as well, too. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so let's get into it. Talk to me about your athletic journey early in life, right? Like, you know, 10 to middle school, early high school age, like where you were with athletics. Cause I think that kind of lays the foundation for the rest of what we're going to talk about.
For sure. Yeah. Well, almost, you know, feel like an imposter starting there because you're right. My childhood was all about swimming growing up. I did play other sports, firm believer in, you know, participating in a lot of sports to find what you're good at, find your passion. But starting by the time I got to high school, it was all swimming all the time. And I do mean that genuinely, right? We got to the point where we were doing 8 or 9 practices a week, and so it was a lot of hours. That basically took up from the time I was 13 till the time I was 22 or 23. That was my form of athletics, my form of exercise, and I hated everything else. My coach is trying to get me to run was almost a non-starter. So the fact that I'm a runner now probably has quite a few people perplexed.
So to walk us through, people who don't know what being a swimmer, being a youth swimmer actually entails, walk us through like the daily, weekly, monthly schedule of it all. Cause I'm still, I still don't understand. I don't understand how people can like, basically like grow past the age of 30 with this sort of athletic background.
Yeah. Well, you don't find a lot of people that swim beyond college years, you know, and high school years, college years. And I think a lot of it has to do with there's just not as much money in the sport there's a lot of reasons. Right. But I think a lot of it, to your point earlier too, is burnout, right? It's a tough sport. I mean, I love the sport to death. I actually coach swimming part-time now on the side as well too. So still love the sport and love what it teaches and instills in you as an individual. But to give you a little bit about kind of what my schedule was, even starting as early as high school, it was, we doubled on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I think we doubled four times a week and had a single on, you know, Tuesday and Saturday. So what is that? My math is horrible. Nine to eight or nine times a week. But we were waking up early. I would wake up at 4:15 in the morning. And my mom, God bless her, would, you know, wake up with me and drive me to swim practice before I had my license, and swim all the way up until you had to get out of the pool to head to school. And as soon as school was over, you're back in the pool, starting dry land before practice, and then you swim in 2 hours. So, I mean, I probably did about 20 hours in the pool each week through high school and through college. And then in college, really the big part that you add on is weightlifting and starting to get stronger in the sport too.
So why is doubles a necessary component of youth swimming?
That is a great question. If you ask me, honestly, I think part of it is about, it's just as much mental as it is physical. I do have a little bit of that old school mentality, and it was built into me by my coaches, both through high school and college, where, you know, putting in the yards, putting in the work is what made you mentally tough. And I do, you know, credit a lot of that to my success in the sport of swimming and later in life as well too, just the ability to withstand pain, and kind of keep going. So, you know, I think there's only so much you can get done in 2 hours. So if you're doing it twice a day, that's even better. Right. So I think there's some to that too, but then I think as you get into some of the more nuance of the sport is really where you can look at where you see the benefits. The morning sessions could be speed and strength, where the evening sessions could be more about aerobic endurance, or threshold, things like that as well too. So we really did have a good schedule in terms of how we were breaking up our workouts to work on different things to make a complete athlete.
And like we think about like a high school schedule, obviously it's not like a sport that in the high school realm would be 12 months a year, right? Not even like 9 months a year, right? It's not just like, hey, school's in session, so there's a swim team going on. But I know a lot of people who do this also compete concurrently on youth teams and, you know, and club teams and things like that. Was that the same thing for you?
For sure. Yeah. You know, I think club swimming is really a big thing. I think as far as a lot of youth sports go, I think club swimming is more pervasive than you know, high school swimming. And if you're a serious high school swimmer or college, you're not just swimming for your high school. You've got to be doing club swimming and swimming year round. And so for us, I mean, our schedule was 50 weeks out of the year. We had 2 weeks off in August, and that was the season.
So when did you have to orientate your athletic life to swimming only if you wanted to continue being the swimmer that you wanted to be?
Yeah. You know, that's a good question too. And I struggle to answer it because I do think there's so much value in being a multi-sport athlete. And just,
and
like
me too, listen, yeah. my son is 8 and he's already being, people are trying to push him into like year round sport clubs. I'm just like, it ain't happening. It's not happening. One told me like, hey, like it would really help him if he did this. I'm like, really? I didn't play basketball until I was in fifth grade, and I played in college. So he's 8, so he's right? Going to be exactly. Fine, I think.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I didn't specialize until I got to high school. You know, I didn't cut down to one sport until I got to high school. And man, I would hate to see kids doing it earlier than that today, even too. I think you're right. I feel the pressure to specialize younger than that too. But you just like get so many better, well-rounded skills. I mean, if you see a bunch of swimmers like trying to do some dry land activities or playing basketball, like you would laugh at the lack of athleticism. Like some people that just, you know, have not developed those fine motor skills and certain things too. So as you're looking at how to become like, have strength off the blocks or, you know, speed out of the turn, things like that. If you're just doing the same thing day in and day out, I think you're definitely selling your development short in a lot of ways.
And how did that affect retention within the sport or even people joining the sport? Was it kind of like something where like, if you're not in the sport by age 10 or 11, like you're not going to be in it, or like, you know, it seems like it would be, again,
most sports are kind of like that too, right? Like, no one's like, hey, I picked up basketball at age 15, right? Like, this, it doesn't really happen unless you're huge, right? Or like, you, or you have a body. If you have certain sports that are like related to this, like, say you're like an offensive lineman, who's like, hey, I'm just a huge person, I can go play football on the offensive line. I never played before, but I can kind of fit in. There are sports that are a little bit more technical in nature, or like maybe aerobic based, where like you just need to build this over time. You can't just like fall into it. This isn't really like super relevant to like a running podcast, but I am just curious, like, just about like the retention within the sport when it is so demanding physically and from a time perspective.
Yeah. Well, there's something to be on one end of the spectrum. There's something to be said for the 10,000 hour rule, right? Like, to be an expert at something, you got to put a lot of hours in the pool. But I mean, sometimes I even asked myself if I was the best swimmer, you know, by the time I got to where I was, because I just outlasted some people that were better than me. And sure, I got better as I got older and I got smarter and stronger and more competitive and all those things too. But there were plenty of people that were faster than me that just burnt out. And it's really easy to do in the sport of swimming. And I actually took a fifth year. I redshirted 1 year in college, so I took a fifth year. My fourth year was just to train just for Olympic trials and see how well I could compete at that meet. And then by the end of the fifth year, you know, I was running on fumes. I was able to get to the finish line and have a good, you know, meet at NCAAs, but I was very happy to be done. And, you know, I've had fits and starts of trying to get back in the pool. And I did it to, you know, to compete in a couple of triathlons and Ironman, things like this, but it's been, you know, that black line on the bottom of the pool and I have a long relationship too. And there's some, you know, long lasting burnout that I still feel for it for sure too, because, that's the other end of the spectrum. I'll just say.
Now, how were you, first of all, where did you go to college?
University of Virginia.
Okay. So in one of the best schools in the world, academically speaking, just an absolutely incredible school. How were you able to stay awake during high school to even get into any college with these kinds of hours and this kind of output? Like, I can only imagine. I'm thinking here, like, in running and swimming are not apples to apples, and we'll talk about so many of the differences from a training theory perspective and the output and things like that. But even just 4 hours of exercise a day is a huge toll. Again, we're going to be talking about sleep later too. Again, it's literally the bedrock of your business. But I just wonder, like, how anyone is it like, just like head on the desk kind of vibes with this kind of schedule.
Yeah. Well, I would be lying if I told you I didn't fall asleep in class on several occasions. Right. And, you know, looking back on it, obviously always hindsight is 20/20 in terms of how you could have prioritized your time better. But yeah, I mean, there's only so many hours in the day to get adequate sleep, to get your schoolwork done, to go to all your classes and get at least 4 hours in the pool a day. So it's kind of tough and I felt like I balanced it the best I could have, but I do think my mental alertness and awareness, suffered through part of my education as well too. And just, you know, like I was so dedicated to this sport, which I think you need to be great at something. But it certainly affected some of my ability to look and think strategically at my academics and you know what potentially was out there as well too for me to be great at. I did well in school, but you know, there's certainly something to be said about trying to be great at too many things at once as well too. So staying awake in some of the classes was hard. Thank you to my teachers that were very engaging. And some of them even were like concerned about me. I definitely remember one or two of the teachers that I really liked, you know, like pulling me aside after class and be like, hey, are you okay? So I was able to balance it the best I could, but a few heads on desks.
And where did you grow up as a kid? Like, where did you go to high school?
The DC area. I grew up in the Washington DC area. And so I went to Georgetown Prep. So, you know, got great education there and, you know, had a good community to support me through swimming there as well too.
So did you just like eat up like the Rich Roll book and all of like his like DC area swimming stories? Like that's like your neck of the woods like the whole time.
So funny you mentioned that, because I just read it or listened to it this year, and his story was so eerily similar to mine that I sent him a message on Instagram right away afterwards. So I mean, Prep and Landon are, you know, our rivals, and just hearing, you know, he swam for the same exact club I did. He swam for my coach. So just hearing all of his stories, and he went to Stanford, I went to Virginia, and then maybe our paths diverged a little bit, but really cool to hear his story and what he took away from it too. And he did some really admirable things in high school in the sport and overcame a lot of adversity. So thanks for bringing that up. I did eat it up. I loved it. I texted a few people right after reading it.
Right. And he does a great job of like contextualizing his achievements in high school for people who maybe aren't familiar with the area or maybe aren't even familiar with swimming at all. But it must have been like funny for you to be like, I know exactly the pool he's talking about. I know exactly the donut place he's talking about. I know exactly the records he's talking about. That's and to exactly be able to put them right. all in context.
Yeah, yeah. Like maybe even to the point of comparing how many donuts each of us ate after practice. Right, yeah.
That's just hysterical. All right. Let's fast forward a little bit. All right. So you're out of college. And, you know, that post-college athletic life for a collegiate athlete can be fraught. It's probably too strong of a word, but it can be tough, right? Because you still have that competitiveness within you. But at the same time, like, you've been living this diehard athletics first or at least 1A lifestyle for such a long time. But now all of a sudden there is no obvious outlet. Like, there's no team. You can kind of do whatever you want. But at the same time, like, there's not a lot of structure in it, and you've had a very structured life up to that point from an athletics perspective. Talk to me about that journey post-college, about finding where you fit in from an athlete perspective.
Yeah, discovery for sure, right? That's the right word to use. And missing my team, my community, especially that environment that I built at UVA and being surrounded by the guys that are still my best friends today, that was the most like shocking and almost even depressing feeling, right, of just being kind of out on your own and in the world and working and no summer breaks and all that stuff. And so obviously that kind of hit. But what I think I found in athletics, and you know, I went from whatever 178 was my swimming weight to, you know, close to 200 those first couple months. So I had to find myself. But I think what I found really relatively quickly was new challenges. It needed to be something new. I that was the peak of my swimming career. But I knew that there were plenty of other feats that I could go out there and chase, that I could be the best I had ever been at those things. And that was really enticing to me. So I started to look for other things that I could do where I could be the best I'd ever been at a new athletic feat. And so then I started experimenting. What came first to me was triathlons, because and cycling. I loved cycling all through school. And you know, you'll never meet a swim coach that allows their athlete to go get on a bicycle. Like, that's heaven forbid that, you
but
know,
why just, it's really, working the same aerobic system,
the risk of injury. Like, oh. you're not going to see any swimmers on skis or bikes, especially with what I said about
our, oh yeah, you know, well, skiing, I mean, forget
our hand eye coordination.
Every basketball coach I've ever had was like, you are not allowed to go skiing. Well, obviously it's like, it was the same season. It's like, when was I ever going to go?
Yeah, yeah, but, exactly. Yeah. So I wanted to get into cycling and was super excited about that. At that point in my life, I still hated running, but I started cycling, and you know, everybody knew I was a good swimmer. So it wasn't within, you know, more than 12 or 24 months that people were like, hey, if you're biking and you know how to swim, you gotta start running as well too, so you can start doing some triathlon. So I think only a year or two outside of school did I do my first Olympic distance triathlon in DC, and met up with a tri crew in the area there.
Hey folks, let's talk about vacation races. So vacation races host half marathons, ultra marathons, and trail running festivals at national parks around the country in week-long running adventures all around the world. These global adventures offer daily 7 to 12K trail runs in the morning and afternoon activities that include high adventure things like glacier treks, zip lining, whitewater rafting, or cultural activities like wine tasting, falconry, historic tours, cooking classes. These things, they offer just such a wide range of things. If you're worried about pace, don't be. They require runners to maintain around a 20-minute mile pace. So as long as you're basically moving with purpose, you're going to be just fine. These adventures are all-inclusive, which means hotels, in-country transportation, meals, drinks, activities, and swag are all covered in the trip. And they just announced their full 2024 calendar, which you're going to want to check out. Again, I know we just started 2023, but you got to plan these trips way in advance. And that's exactly what they're trying to do. They have 11 different destinations. Examples are like Alaska, Costa Rica, Croatia, Ecuador, Iceland, Ireland, Japan, New Zealand, Patagonia, so many. It really is remarkable. You can go check them out at vacationraces.com. New customers can use Rambling200 for $200 off any global adventure trip that is not currently sold out. Also, you can use code Rambling15 for 15% off any of the half marathons or ultra marathon adventures that are not currently sold out. So remember, it's code Rambling200 for the global adventures and Rambling15 for 15% off the half marathon or ultra marathons. And, you know, just anecdotally speaking, like, what percentage of college swimmers that you know personally end up kind of going into triathlon shortly after their college career?
Yeah,
it seems like it's a pretty high percentage.
It's a lot. Yeah. I think you probably talked to a lot of swimmers too that have complaints about the proportions of a triathlon and you know, why is the swim portion so short? But I think we'd be a lot more competitive if, you know.
I never hear the runners complain about how short the swim is.
No, you don't hear runners or cyclists complain about it. If anything, they still think it's too long. Yeah. But I'm like, come on, like I only get an hour to get ahead of you guys. And there was actually like a really fun, I mean, this was, I guess, 10, 15 years ago at this point in time, but they had the little dots, you know, on a map that you could watch after your run. So watching my little dot, you know, jump out ahead and one or two people pass me on the bike, but just this glob of dots like chasing me and engulfing me on the run.
It's like Pac-Man.
Yeah, it's exactly what it looked like. Yeah. So that was my entry into the world of triathlon.
Well, you know, kudos to the swimmers out there. I mean, like the foundation of triathlon as a sport was like built on the back of like Dave Scott and Mark Allen. And like they came to triathlon primarily from a swimming background, like water polo as well in Dave Scott's situation. But like they came in through the pool, and like they, you know, triathlon is what it is because of what they were able to do the first 15 years of the sport.
Yeah, for sure. So, and I love it. And I, you know, it's just one of those things, triathlon, time permitting, you know, gear permitting, all that stuff. It's such a great way to train if you've got the time to do it, to be able to.
Well, let's be real. Triathlon is a full-time job.
Yeah, exactly.
Even amateur, I'm barely making the cutoff. Triathlon is like a full-time job.
Right. Yes. I couldn't
Except of getting paid, you have to shell out that tens of thousands of dollars instead of getting paid tens of thousands of dollars.
It's sick. Yep.
All right. So, you go to start doing the triathlon stuff. Obviously running has to play a part into this at some point. Talk to me about, you know, your first year or two in running in terms of like, you know, again, setting the stage for now, like, and you're about to run an ultra. Like, so obviously like, you know, skipping to the last page here, like it obviously clicked at some point. Talk to me about those early years about not only your feelings towards the sport, but how you approached it from a training perspective, you know, mentally and physically, and just how it played, I guess how you approached those efforts in training.
Yeah, I love talking about it. It's not something I really like have talked about very much, but it was discovery for me as well too, and I've found love for running for sure over the past decade. And my first experience was, well, so part of the reason I was horrible at running was I was a breaststroker as a swimmer. So if you know anything about breaststrokers, we're, you know, we've got the like weird duck legged feet. And so I'm kind of waddling around, which is not really great technique for runners. So I tried running like that for a while. I think I went through one or two stress fractures, and it wasn't until I slowed myself down and really slowed myself down and retrained myself to run with proper form that I was able to start to get it, and able to start getting better at the sport and able to start dropping time. So, you know, I went through that experiment, you know, over the course of several months or a year where, you know, I felt like I was going so slow, 10, 12 minute pace, but just focusing on my feet, focusing on my legs. Probably still don't have like great technique or perfect technique today, but enough to kind of keep me going. And so that was formative for me. And then once I saw that I could do it without getting injured, figured out how to get a little bit faster, figured out, you know, that pacing and the way you handle pacing and the way you can kind of divide up your training in ways that was synonymous to swimming in certain ways in my mind, made it so that I could start to do more of it for sure.
And as you were preparing to like, all right, should I do an Ironman and things like that, where obviously if you're doing an Ironman, we're talking about a marathon, and the half Ironman distance, you're doing a half marathon. when you're approaching that level of training, how much running were you doing in those kinds of weeks leading up to those types of races?
Yeah, you know, I would say when I was doing Olympic distance triathlons, I probably was flying by the seat of my pants a little bit in terms of my training.
You know, and what is that, like a 5 or 10K?
So yeah, 10K, finishing with a 10K run. So, you know, I was making sure to get a couple of runs in a week, but not really necessarily taking my training or how I was structuring my training, all that seriously, making sure to get a couple of bricks in, you know, where you're doing, biking and then running to feel what your brick legs feel like. But it wasn't really until, I trained for my Ironman. That was just a few years ago that I was really regimented about how much I was running. I did do a couple of marathons, or at least one or two marathons before I did Ironman. Pretty good rule of thumb to run a marathon before you try doing Ironman. So that was part of what got me into marathoning as well too. I did, you know, that was a big goal of mine to be able to say, hey, I'm an Ironman and want to do an Ironman. And so it's like, well, you better get out there and do a couple marathons. So that got me into the mindset of needing to train for a marathon, which was the first time I started looking at actual structured programs. And at that point in time, I was probably never really running more than 4 days a week. And I actually like that too. I would vary up some of my aerobic stuff too with maybe doing a little bit of biking there as well too, to continue to build up that aerobic engine, but feeling like I was never doing too much on my legs where I was putting myself in a position to get injured.
Yeah. I really want to dive into the training theory element of this, because as you're building up towards these marathons in preparation for an Ironman, obviously you have a huge aerobic base at this point, right? I mean, you've been building it at that point for decades, and that's certainly not the problem. Your cardiovascular system is humming. Mm-hmm. With that said, as you know, part of the marathon is fitness. Lord knows it's like the biggest part, but at the same time, it's also just tolerance for being on your feet for a bunch of hours in a row, which doesn't lend itself necessarily to triathlon training. Because a lot of it, you're not on your feet. You have this huge aerobic base. You're training 20 to 25 hours a week. It's some really intense stuff, but you're personally not on your feet, you know, the 10 to 12 hours that you would be if you were only running, right? Yep. Or merely running. So talk to me about how you were able to prepare for the marathon, not from a fitness perspective, because certainly you had that going for years, but more in terms of like, hey, when I hit mile 18 or 20, like my legs still need to be under me, no matter what my heart rate's doing.
Yeah. Well, if I'm being honest about my Ironman experience, I definitely was, you know, undertrained from a running perspective relative to if I was just training for a marathon. That's for sure, right? I feel like you can probably only get 60, 70, 80% of the amount of miles in that you would want to get. But I felt like that was actually a good thing because it you know, just less pounding on my legs. And if my technique's not perfect, I just feel like I'm more prone to getting injured. And so I wasn't. I went in relatively healthy. I did have an injury kind of scare 6 months out, but was able to rest a little bit and be in good shape. So by the time I got to the Ironman, I was in solid running shape. And I mean, by the time you finish 110 miles, I was completely gassed. I didn't even think I could get out of the chair. I was like staring at my volunteer and laughing. Like it was almost comical that I had to get up, let alone run a marathon. So, out of all the things I've done in my life to this day, the Ironman was definitely the most sustained pain that I've ever, you know, that I've ever been in. When people ask like what hurt the most, I was like, the last 6 hours hurt the most. You can just kind of sustain pain. So I think my marathon was four and change or something like that. So
I mean, that's really good, man. That's like 9:30 pace.
Yeah, kind of kept plugging along, and my legs held up well. And it was 100% more mental than physical for me at that point.
Oh my god, that is wild. All right, so this is something that you know very well, but I'd love for you to talk before we really dive into this about just like generally speaking, as someone who has cycled a ton, who swam at a high level and is now coaching swimming, in addition to many of the other things you're doing, just the difference in terms of high output workouts that you can do and many times a week in the pool and on a bike compared to what you can actually do from a running perspective. And the difference is there, because I think that this is a key point that I want to talk about later, just to see, like, first of all, like, where you are now with how you view that, and also how you, like, maybe trial and errored your way, like, to that current understanding.
Yeah, no, it's a great question, because, I mean, endurance sports can take a ton of time. And you know, if you ask me why I haven't done another Ironman since 2019 when I did my first and only right now, it's the time it takes to train for it. It really is the answer. It still leaves a lasting memory how much it hurt. You know, that's still there as well too. But yeah, I mean, just the you know, weeks and months leading up to it, you know, my wife's asking, where are you? And am I contributing as much as I need to? And, you know, certain things, am I doing as much work as I need to on the business? All things like that are serious questions. So I've definitely felt like I've found a balance in terms of finding new athletic endeavors to strive for, while balancing how much time it takes to try and achieve that goal as well too. So even as I'm training for a 50-mile ultra right now, this is a first one for me. It's new. I'm super excited about it, but I'm having to put in longer runs than I would if I was training for a marathon too. So, you know, I did a 5.5 hour run or 5 hour run on Saturday. Luckily that's my longest run, but you know, that takes out a lot of valuable hours out of the day as well too.
Right. It's not like you can just come home and like immediately like open up the computer and start being super efficient too.
that's right. Yeah. My wife and she's been so supportive. So I say this in jest, but like she calls me afterwards and she's like, oh, so we got to do X, Y, and Z. And I was in such a fog still after my run. I was like, I know. I was like, can I call back in 30 minutes? Just because my brain was just, I was not of my right mind yet too, that it takes a little bit of time to get back into the groove of being something, being a useful, productive human being in other spheres of life too.
Now the 80-20 rule is kind of like the common principle used in terms of like easy output on like the 80 front, and then like, you know, moderate to hard output in the 20 percentile. That's kind of pretty common in running. Have you experienced that same sort of ratio in swimming and cycling, or is it a little bit more towards the 50-50 end because it's basically those are non-impact sports?
I think the impact does drive a lot of that for sure as well too. I think, you know, in swimming we would go kind of the max aerobic you could hit for long periods of time, right? Just pumping up and cycling as well too. Like, how much can your muscles handle is very different than how much can you your bones and your like body, your structure actually handle. So I do think sometimes that I feel like I get better aerobic workouts. So if I just need to pound out like a hard aerobic workout and burn as many calories as I can in 45 minutes, I'm probably jumping on the bike or the Peloton or something like that, because that probably would be the most efficient way for me to do it. But swimming or running's a different challenge. Yeah, for sure too. I think the biggest thing that's been a challenge for me with that 80-20, which I believe for sure too, but I've found that my biggest challenge has been that my technique in running is different when I'm running fast and running slow. Sometimes my like slow technique is worse than my fast technique as well too. So if there's a big difference between running slow and running lazily, and I need to make that I'm not just running lazily, because that's where I feel like I've found myself getting in trouble.
Now, when you first started, you know, putting a lot of time into running, did you have to adapt to that? Like, maybe you didn't even have it in like, maybe you didn't have access to the idea of the 80-20 rule at that point, but getting used to the fact that like, hey, I just can't go out here and hammer. Like, I'm used to going out when I'm in the pool, when I'm on the bike, I'm hammering. Whereas like when I go out for a run, like I can't kind of maintain that if I like want to be out here for more than 3 weeks.
For sure. And swimmers, I mean, you probably get this, are so obsessed with times, right? Like you literally have a coach standing over top of you, like reading out the clock all the time. So it's so ingrained in your brain too, to care about your time. So if you're doing something that you're like, oh, you know, okay, well, I feel okay, I'm going 8 minute pace, whatever. And like, well, why don't I get under, you know, it's so easy just to tempt yourself to do those things. I know that's true for everybody as well too. But that's been a challenge for me. And I think, again, just the main thing that's pulled me back from that brink is making sure that I have the longevity in it to keep going, as opposed to being really proud of what you do one day and then sitting, you know, needing to sit on the couch for 2 or 3 weeks to recover.
Right. And if road running is a slight departure from that structure, then trail running is a vast departure from that structure, especially for a lot of people. So what's that been like, adopting the trails and really separating yourself from a hard metric perspective, especially like if they're not like, it's not like you're running the same trail every day, making apples to apples comparisons, and being able to adopt a less metric focused judgment of how things are going.
Yeah. The two things I like about trail running, the scenery is obviously better. And then I think it's freeing is the other thing in terms of like, it kind of frees you from the clock because depending on your terrain, you're trying to come up with whatever a good pace is on the trail is just so non-consequential or just looked at so differently in the world of trail running than it is in the world of road racing. I love hiking. I love being out there and I love hiking. And it almost just, sometimes I just think of trail running as fast hiking. You know, it's almost more like fast hiking. You're just trying to get through the trail as fast as you can, but I don't really feel like I'm racing the clock or trying to beat a pace when I'm trail running. And that is freeing to me in some sense too.
No, I believe it. Now you're a business owner. You started your own business, Lagoon Sleep, and truth be told, you've been a sponsor of this podcast before, and I loved your story. We talked many times before you became a sponsor of the show. And I love this because just going back to your, and this is why I wanted to start with the swimming stuff. Talk to me about like, and I purposely did ask this question when we talked about swimming before, but talk to me about like your relationship with sleep and or recovery, you know, from your high school days on as an athlete, like looking back, not only like, I guess your perception of it then, and then your perception of it now with some distance and with some expertise in this area.
Yeah, for sure. I think at a young age, you don't really realize who you are when you're growing up. You just think that's how everybody lives.
Right, like, you know, you're tired, but you're like, right. I'm not really sure what that means.
but you know, I guess the flip side of that, sure, I was tired, but I was pretty regimented about going to bed, right? You know, like, cause I had to be, cause the clock always rang at 4:15, right? So I knew I was getting up. So if I didn't want to be exhausted, if I wanted to stand a chance the next day, I better be paying attention to when I was going to bed too. So I think from a very young age, I really placed a premium on sleep and made sure that I was prioritizing it. Did I always get enough of it, or did I actually know what enough was? I probably didn't really know what enough was until relatively recently too, but it's always been really top of mind for me. I think that has played a really big role in terms of why I've created the company that I have.
Hey everybody, this episode is brought to you by SaySky, a super fun and interesting apparel brand that I have grown to love. They were formed back in 2013 by a former windsurfer, Lars Peterson, who wanted to bring fun and just an exciting attitude to the apparel brand while also having the best and highest quality stuff out there. And that's exactly what this brand has been able to do, has unbelievably high quality gear that is just fantastic, but in a way that doesn't take itself too seriously and is fun and really interesting looking. In addition to that, their whole process is about supporting sub-elite athletes. And that's exactly why they wanted to reach out to the Rambling Runner podcast to work with all of you, because that's exactly who they're looking to work with, basically. And for them, they call them the everyday heroes, right? The people who are juggling work, friends, family, and their athletics. All the stuff that we do on a daily basis. And that's exactly why SaySky was created. Like I said before, go check them out at saysky.us. That's SaySky, saysky.us, to see their really interesting, just their color choices, their design elements combined with really durable attire. And not only that, if you use code RR15, you can also save 15% on your order. That's RR15 to save 15% on your order today at saysky.us. Especially with that age group, the teenage age group, is that like you hear about the circadian rhythms and things like that. I just remember for me, like, I couldn't go to sleep before 10, right? Like, I just couldn't. Like, and even like during basketball season when I was probably at my tiredest or most tired, like, we had practice at 7. So, like, I was going to sleep at 10 because I was still like, I was just getting out of the shower at 10 o'clock at night. Like, I wasn't like anyone who's ever run at night after like their kids have gone to bed or something. Like, whether you had a great run or not, like, you were still awake 2 hours after that run just because like your body's moving, like you're active, right? Like, so I never really had an early night as a high schooler. I just never did. But at the same time, like, we had very different athletic schedules. So for you, like, you say you were pretty regimented. Like, what was bedtime when you were in high school?
I probably about that. Like I was probably going to trying to go to bed around nine, you know, I don't think I was going to bed by 10 because that's 6 hours of sleep. And I know I don't have never functioned well on 6 hours of sleep. So I was probably trying to wind down by 9 o'clock. I've always strived to get 7 hours of sleep. And I realize now that that's actually not enough for me to really be at peak performance. So that's a different topic, but that's kind of what my schedule was. But to your point too, about different sleep schedules, and that stuff does change over the course of an individual's life for sure too. Adolescents in particular, typically do their cycles typically are later. So their circadian rhythms are a little bit funkier and typically do stay up later. And there's a reason why everybody knows that, you know, stereotype of the high school kid that's sleeping in till noon or 2 p.m. or whatever it is, that a little bit does more align with their natural circadian rhythm at that point in their life. And it, you know, it'll tend early up, but even as adults, people do have different chronotypes and some people naturally will want to fall asleep later. But there has definitely been a lot of research done to show that like going to bed earlier and waking up earlier tends to be kind of the healthiest cycle people can get themselves into.
Now, I want to talk about like you balancing all the things in your life, because I'm sure it's tough. So with that framework, when did you start Lagoon?
Yeah. So I started the company. Well, started, you know, a little bit on the side while I was still working at NBC Sports. But we officially launched in August of 2021.
Okay. So over the last few years, again, now you're preparing for a 50-mile ultra, right? So like you're still taking on athletic challenges. Talk to me about that, because starting a company is daunting. Like there's never the to-do list never gets smaller, mm-hmm. right? You're like, there's always more things on it. And you're like, oh, look at this new thing. I could add this to the to-do list, right? Like the to-do list never ends, and like the possible things on the to-do list never get smaller either, right? It's just these two expansive, never-ending pools, right?
Yeah,
so
for sure.
You have all that going on, and you have the rest of your life, and you got your athletic life. So I guess, first of all, like, why do endurance sports when you already have a big-time job where you're trying to get this thing launched, you're doing a great job, but like, there's already not enough hours in the day, to say nothing of putting some of those hours into endurance sports.
Yeah. Well, I would say I've got kind of three things, and let's see if I can remember them in order here, that I'd like to hit on to answer that. Because I care about this a lot, and I think it's really important. I would love to see a lot more people think about it this way too, but I've always been at my best professionally, I feel like, when I actually am training for something physically as well too. And I think that the best way I could explain that is that it helps me compartmentalize things and really make sure that I'm being regimented with my time so that I can function well in everything. So, you know, time can fly, right? If you're just kind of wandering around, you can burn through 3 hours really easily just tinkering with this or that. But if I go out for an hour run or a 2 hour run, and I know I've only got 1 hour remaining, like I'm thinking about how I'm going to be making the best use of that hour as well too. So I do feel like I just, and this has been true for me throughout my professional career, not just in starting the business, but even in, you know, at NBC Sports, when I was training for other things, I felt like I was trying to get through a rough patch, or I was trying to get other things at work on track. And that has always been helpful to me. I think as I look at how I'm building the Lagoon business now, I think one of the big things for me is practicing what I preach. And I think one of the things that's really important about sleep, like I don't want Lagoon just to be a sleep company. We're a sleep fitness company. I want people to think about sleep as a means to an end. You're getting quality sleep. You're getting optimal sleep so that you can do something amazing the next day. And we're definitely focused on athletes. We're definitely focused on performance. And so, like I said, practice what I preach. I want to show that I'm not only getting quality sleep, I'll tell you how I'm sleeping. I'll tell you how much time I'm investing in it. But then I'm still, you know, having the ability to get those athletic feats in there while building a business. So I'm doing all of those things, and it's allowed me as a founder to be like a founder-led brand as well, and be out there and talking about what we do as a company, and connect with people and share my stories and hear their stories and create lasting bonds. And that's just made it more fun and exciting too. And so that kind of leads into the third thing, which is like, I do it because I get enjoyment out of it. And like, I get enjoyment out of building a business. It's been such a fun journey. But I get enjoyment out of athletics, and I get enjoyment out of chasing a new physical challenge as well too. So, I'm a Libra. Maybe that's why I keep talking about balance so much, but like, it's just always ingrained in me. I always kind of want to have it all. And I want to like be able to look back on my life and say, I felt like I accomplished things physically. I accomplished things professionally. And if it takes, you know, managing my time and just figuring out what I can and can't do, that's kind of the way I compartmentalize things in my head. But if you feel like you can't have it all, maybe let me just be one person in the column that says you can have it all. It just comes down to time management.
My college basketball coach used to always say that you have your athletic life, you have your academic life, and you have your social life, and you can pick two. You have three things, pick two of them. Right? Yeah. And I guess a reason I bring that up is, what don't you do, right? So say like you have to, like, obviously you have to take certain things out, right? There's certain, you can't do all the things all the time, right? There's certain, obviously maybe there's some leisure activities that you can't participate in, or, you know, yeah, stuff like that. So without being like too leading on the question, like, what are things that like you just don't have time to do that you're like, hey, yeah, you know what? Like, if I say like I, you know, was injured, I would probably do more of this. Or like, yeah, if like, hey, like, you know, like, the business was booming, I could take 6 weeks off, I would do more of that, right? Like, yeah, what are things that you choose, say, hey, I don't have time for this right now, but in a perfect world, I would love to do those things as well.
I think for me, it's a fair question. And I think you could probably say any of the above, right? But for me, it comes down to prioritizing the things that need to happen today. And so I would just say maybe any of those things aren't moving as fast or aren't necessarily as ambitious over a certain time period as they could be. Like, I could be training for a 100-mile race, or, you know, Lagoon could be growing potentially twice as fast if I was, you know, working 18 hours a day and sleeping zero, or 4 hours.
You could literally do that. Instead of being the poster child of why, yeah, sleep is important, you'd be like, hey, yeah, you want to see how important sleep is? I'm not going to sleep.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then see which Ryan performs better. Yeah. Right. That would be an interesting experience.
So what is that documentary where the guy like has fast food like for 30 straight
yeah,
days?
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. The McDonald's guy.
Supersize me. Right. So you can do like the sleep version of that and be like, instead of trying to show people how, like, trying to, like, you know, attract people with honey, you can do like the opposite. Be like, you want to see how important sleep is? Here's what happens when you don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe when we have a little bit more money in the bank and or a sponsor of the documentary. Yeah. I like that idea though. And we have been thinking of like some challenges we could do around like sleep and athletics and stuff like that. So that's a cool idea, because I think that is one of the hardest things about sleep in general too. And that's been the struggle that I've been really trying to shine a light on the most is, you know, it's like anything, right? You could be a runner or somebody who ran yesterday, and is running in your identity. It's something you do, you know, three or five or however many times a week, and 20 years down the road, you're healthier because of it. Or did you run that one time? And I think I think about sleep the same way, in the sense that, some people can just, it's just easy to push off sometimes too and say, hey, I got a great night of sleep last night. But are you a great sleeper? Are you somebody that feels like that thing is important enough that you're prioritizing it every single day? And I feel like, you know, sleep is the one of the three pillars that gets forgotten or kicked over the most often. There's, you know, athletics or performance, there's nutrition, and there's sleep. And everybody talks about how important sleep is. But I think it's always just the first one to go. I've got so many other things to do. And I think it's the fact that sleep is kind of like the lack of doing that makes it seem like it's the one thing that you can forget the most. But I mean, I think the reason it can resonate with athletes and with runners so well is because they do have that long-term mindset. They do already have that knowledge and that experience of, if you work on something long enough and you do see the dividends at the end of the road, they at least get it a little bit more. Whereas opposed to somebody like who's got that quick mindset, that need for the dopamine hit for something to pay off right away, that's where you really run into, I think, the issues with sleep just being an afterthought.
Yeah, it's true. Anyone with like either has like a busy life because they're participating in a lot of athletics, so they're just naturally more tired and need that recovery.
Very true.
Like, it, like, for the same reason that you went to bed early in high school. Like, you don't have a choice. Like, you're training, you're just like, you're not going to be like, oh, I wonder why I feel this way. Like, you're going to know pretty easily. And like, there's not gonna be much of a question like, hey, you know, this is obviously going to be key to it. Look at how different I feel. I love the meme. And I know you see it because you're online. You're always like marketing the business and stuff like that, where it's like, oh my God, I would do anything to sleep for 8 hours tonight. And the other person's like, then how about, I don't know, would you go to sleep 8 hours before you need to wake up? And they're like, oh no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, exactly. I know. There's so many good ones too. And everybody's been in that situation. Could you put your phone down like 15 minutes before bed? Like, no, I'll do anything to get a good night of sleep, but I like won't do, like, I will not do that.
Right. Exactly. It's like a Meatloaf song. All right. So we're going to get into the 5 shoe questions sponsored by Running Warehouse. If you're watching this over on YouTube, first of all, thank you. Go watch our episode with Ryan Hurley over on the Rambling Runner podcast. So, Ryan, first question, what's your favorite daily trainer? And if you're running on the roads and trails, you can say one for each.
Okay. Well, for the roads, my favorite everyday trainer right now for sure is the Pegasus. And I've been running on Pegasus probably for 5 or 6 years now. It's just been super solid for me. Nice. I've got high arches. I love it.
Nice. Well, yeah, it's definitely tailor-made for that. For sure. No question. How about on trails? Or do you wear them on trails?
Trails, I haven't found that perfect shoe yet.
Gotcha. All right. So you're training for a 50-mile ultra, which is really exciting. What's the race day shoe for you, either for that distance or for any other distance? Yeah.
So I am excited about my race day shoe for that. I've just switched out and I'm trying the Nike Zagama. And so I've probably put about just 20, 30 miles on that so far. Nice and cushy. The race is in Leadville, so don't have to worry about slipping or anything like that. But feels good and happy to. I've tried a lot of other shoes, but happy to give Nike a go on the trails.
Yeah, shoot. Drew Holman wore that exact same shoe this past weekend at the Mountain World Championships over in Innsbruck, and he finished 5th. He was wearing the Zagama for that race. So
awesome.
You know, maybe you're not going to be as fast as Drew. I'll just put that out there. But you wear the same shoes. So there you go.
There you go. I love it.
All right. Has there ever been a shoe that you were really excited about and you couldn't wait to get it? You finally got on your feet and it just didn't quite work for you.
Yeah. So that has been the trail shoe that I just came off of. And I love Saucony. I've tried a couple of their shoes, and the Peregrine, just, I don't know if I'm saying that right. I think it's Peregrine.
Like, yeah.
It's not working out. Or it was not working out for me. I think it's just not quite enough support on the inside of my foot. And that probably may have just more to do with me than the shoe itself. It's for people that are built like runners and can have something really low profile. But I liked it. I didn't love it.
Yeah. It's especially the 11 and 12 were pretty low stack, firm, kind of like one of those, like, want to run fast on trails kind of vibe, not like your all day trail.
Exactly.
Shoe.
Yeah. So I've been running on the 12. I think I counted at least 265 miles on it. I think it was probably closer to 300. So it did me good. It put me through a lot of miles, but it's not cushy.
No, not at all. All right. How about if you go back in time, like, what was like the first running shoe that you loved? Your first love?
Yeah. So it was actually Asics. Why am I forgetting? Not the Nimbus, but the Kayano. The Kayano was like the first one that actually got me running consistently, kept me from getting stress fractures that felt good for me. So that was my first love.
That makes a lot of sense. And people who've listened to the episode know this. Ryan comes from a swimming background, and you mentioned earlier in the podcast that, like, your form wasn't great, right? As a breaststroker, you kind of had like the duck walk going on. So it does make sense that kind of the classic stability running shoe, which the Kayano absolutely is, would be a good fit for you, especially early on in your running career.
For sure.
All right. Last question before we get going, Ryan. First of all, thank you so much for coming on the show. If people haven't done so already, go over to the Rambling Runner podcast, check out Ryan's episode. Also, make sure you check out lagoonsleep.com to see his business and everything that they're doing. Just absolutely great stuff. And partnering with a lot of really interesting athletes, college athletes too, which is really fun and exciting in the NIL world. So, Ryan, before we get going, if money was no object in 2023, what running shoe would you want to buy?
Oh yeah. I mean, so I've never actually run in any carbon fiber plated shoe yet. So I'd love to try one of those. I mean, I probably have read the most and looked at, you know, either the Nikes or Saucony's, one of those two, the Endorphin Elite, I think it is, right?
Yep.
Or the Nike Zoom Alpha Vaporfly, whatever the latest one is. I'd probably go to a running store, try on both of those shoes and see which one felt best. But those are at the top of the list for me.
Yeah, I know a lot of my friends love the Endorphin Elite for sure. I love the Endorphin Pro 3, which is like was their top shoe until the Endorphin Elite came out. And then it's interesting, like with, you know, the Alpha Fly, especially like the Alpha Fly 2, it really is like you mentioned before, like it depends on your foot and depends on your strength. I know some people who really like the Alpha Flies, and other people like me, like I put it on, like I have narrow feet too. And I put on like, oh my God, I just can't run in this shoe. Like the arch is very unique.
Interesting.
Like, I know very unique is a little redundant, but it is. It's very, very unique. So it's like, I have no idea. Like some people love it. Again, some people don't. I would definitely say try it on first, or at least have
okay,
to go, at least buy it from someplace with a good return policy, just in case you're like, yeah, I don't know about this one.
Yeah. Well, stop by the running store. I'll stop by Mill City or something like that. Give it a try. Yeah.
Or running warehouse. We got links for all these in the show notes as well. Especially with like, no, hey, here's the thing. And this is what I tell people all the time. Like if you have a great independent shoe store near you, those things are great for the community. Those are fantastic. And like they are paramount to the growth of running. At the same time, they don't have every kind of shoe. And Running Warehouse is a great is one of those. If you're going to go online and buy it, they're the best in my turn. As my wife knows from all the boxes that arrive on my doorstep, I'm on that website a lot. Probably
awesome.
Too much.
I'm going to check them out for sure.
That's for sure. Ryan, thank you so much for coming on the show, my man.
Awesome. Thanks, Matt. I appreciate having me.